We are doing Mishlei. We're up to the 24th chapter, the 20th pasuk, Perek Chaf Dalid, pasuk Chaf, and we'll go back to the 19th pasuk just to make it a little bit easier to get the flow, and maybe we'll dedicate our learning tonight to Rav Avram Tzvi ben Rav Shimon. His neshama should have an aliyah. The pasuk says, Al titchar b'mireim, al tekanei b'resha'im. Don't be jealous. Don't mingle with those who do evil. Don't aspire to be like them. Don't be jealous of their success. Sometimes we see people that are evil, but they're successful. So we're jealous. We want to be like them. Shlomo Malach warns us not to. Ki lo tiye acharit lara ner reshaim yidach, because their end will not be like their beginning. Initially it seems like they're flourishing, everything's going well, but ultimately they will wither, and they will be like a lamp that is just put out. The fire is put out, and that's ner reshaim, the lamp of the wicked, yidach. Their flame hovers and goes out, just like the flame of an oil lamp. So what should one do? So Shlomo HaMelech tells us, Yira et Adonai beni v'melech im shonim al titarav. A person should be God-fearing, and a person should also have respect for the king. Person should be fearful of the king. And this balance is critical, because ordinarily when a person comes close to someone in power, that affects his capacity to be a God-fearing person. His thoughts are always, how do I please my boss? What does he want from me? How will I make him happy? How will I advance within the political scene? That's why Chazal said when a person comes close to people in positions of power, that automatically affects their yiras shamayim. So Shlomo HaMelech warns us, Yira et Hashem b'ni. Firstly, be a God-fearing person. And then, v'melech. Have fear of the king as well. That's also important. Im shonim. Al titarav. And don't mingle, don't go with people who try to go against the king, who try to go and rebel, or do things their own way. Have fear of the king as well. Respect the authority. Kifitom yakum eidam ufid shenehem mi yodea, because they will find themselves suddenly, fitom, suddenly, yakum eidam, they'll find themselves destroyed in a flash, ufid shenehem, and the punishment of both of them, meaning both the one who transgresses Hashem's mitzvot, or the one who transgresses the king's commandments, mi yodea, who knows how great the punishment will be. Meaning, when a person messes around with the authorities, he cannot anticipate what they'll do, how they'll punish him. And how much more so if a person is not going to listen to the mitzvot of Hashem. So Shlomo HaMelech here really painted a picture. He said, don't go with those that are wicked, those that are evil. They won't have a future. Be a God-fearing person. And also, don't go with rebellious people. Be a person who respects the authorities. Because those who try to go against Hashem's mitzvot, or those who try to go against the authorities, they will suddenly find themselves being punished, and they'll be surprised. Suddenly he's sitting 3 years in jail. Suddenly he's in a dungeon. You never know what the reaction will be from above when you go against what they want. So Shlomo HaMelech says, don't even mingle with people who try to do things differently than the law. Gameile lachachamim hakerfanim b'mishpat baltov. Shlomo HaMelech says, even though it would seem superfluous to say this to wise people, because anyone should be able to figure this out on his own, nonetheless, I'm telling this to the wise men, and I can rely on them that they'll take the lesson another notch. Ten lechacham yichkamot. You give a wise person, so you can rest assured that he'll take what you've said and develop it, he'll advance with it. So Shlomo HaMelech says, what I'm about to tell you, I'm saying to the wise men, the people who are the judges, you should know that even if you think that you'll do a just, your justice will be fair, you'll rule justly, Shlomo HaMelech says, Hakel panim, to recognize someone in court, to treat him favorably is not good. Even if you feel like I'm going to rule in favor of him because he deserves it, but don't treat them differently. Don't treat him as though he's your friend. You're going to rule that way because that's what you feel is fair. So you say, what's wrong if I treat him nicely? He's the one that I'm going to rule in favor of him. So Shomel says no. Because there's a chilul Hashem. When people see that you treat the two people, you treat them differently, so even if you're going to rule justly, there's still going to be a chilul Hashem. Omer l'rasha tzadik ata yikevu amim yizamu leumin. If someone practices sycophancy, he says to the wicked, you're just. So what happens? The wicked say, hey, everyone's honoring me. When they make dinners, they give me the guest of honor, the Keter Shem Tov. So he says, I can keep doing what I've been doing. So ultimately a person, he cheats more people. He becomes a bigger gangster. Everyone's honoring him. So then ultimately more people curse those that honor him. So very often the wicked do have money and people are tempted to give them honors. Shlomo HaMelech says you got to be very careful. Anyone who says to the wicked, you're righteous, so the whole nation will ultimately curse that person. Yikevu amim, nations will curse him because that encourages the wicked to continue their ways. Yizamuhu leumim, the nations will be angry at such a person. Vilamochichim yinam va'aleihem tavo vilkatov. But if someone rebukes the wicked, then things will be pleasant for them. If he tells him, if a person tells him, technically you're a good guy. Just look, you've done this wrong, you've done that wrong. Velamochichim yinam, and when a person gives tochacha, then it's more pleasant to say things nicely, to say you're a good guy. Just this isn't 100%. It's always easier to come and practice a sycophancy. Va'alehem tavo birkatov, and things. Shlomo HaMelech is saying. Again, Shlomo HaMelech says like this. When you come to give someone rebuke, so you could come and say, you should know you're just a wicked person. You're a terrible person. The person's going to walk away demolished, and you probably will have achieved nothing. If you come to a person and tell him positively, you should know, you're a fine person. It's not so nice that you're overcharging your tenants. You have tenants who really can't pay this type of rent, and you're twisting their arm. You should really lower the rent. Or a similar example, he comes and he says things positively, and within the positive things he includes rebuke, he includes the message. So then v'lamochichim yinam, so then things will go more pleasant, the rebuke will go more pleasant, and ultimately blessing will come out of that. Because if you try to go head on, very often it doesn't work. The person doesn't want to listen to you. When God rebukes Miriam in last week's parasha for us, or this week's parasha for the people in Chutz La'aretz, in Parshas Ba'alosra, God first speaks gently, right? As we discussed last week, whenever a person's rebuking, he has to come positively. And we discussed it also in our marriage classes, that the key to giving criticism, if one's already reached a point where he's giving criticism, is to show appreciation for everything else that is right, for everything else that is good, before, during, and after the criticism. That's key. Because what are we saying when we criticize someone? We're saying, you're not up to par. You're not where you should be. And if we begin by saying, you should know, you're great in this, you're great in that, I really appreciate this, I really appreciate that. There's this point which I thought we should discuss, that maybe we could do this a little bit differently, and I really appreciate that you do the other thing, and the third thing, and the fourth thing. So then you're showing the person, as a general whole, I like you, I appreciate you. There's a minor point which I want to talk to you about. And that's key, then the person could hear it. And then the relationship is less affected by the rebuke. Clear? Yeah? Okay. Sifataim yishak meshiv devarim nechochim. The wicked person, when he hears rebuke given this way, will have to seal his lips. He won't reply in brazenness. Ordinarily, when you tell someone you're wrong, his initial reaction is, I'm right. That's the first reaction. Whatever, it doesn't matter how wrong he is. When we attack a person, and every time you give rebuke, it's taken personally. Very often we like to think, I didn't say anything personal. It's not personal. You know, I wasn't saying something personal. Anytime you give rebuke, it's personal. As much as a person could tell himself it's not personal, it's always taken personally. All I asked was, why did you set up the dishes in the dish rack this way? That's personal? Yes, it's personal. I worked, I did something, you're telling me to do it differently. You guys have no clue what I'm talking about. Any married person knows what I'm talking about. okay. Say that. Shlomo HaMelech says, if when you rebuke, you do it in the context of praise, so then sifatayim yishak, the listener will seal his lips. Yishak is, he'll clamp them together. We use it for the word nishika, because when you give a kiss, you also pucker the lips together. So sifatayim yishak literally means, he'll put his lips together. Meshiv devarim nechochim. And he'll also respond positively. He'll say, you know what? I hear what you're saying. He'll give a positive response. Hachin bachutz melachtecha. Ve'at, yeah. The one who's hearing the rebuke, when it's given in this context, sifatayim yishak will seal his lips. Meshiv devarim nechochim, and he will respond with positive, with correct responses, because in that context he'll be able to hear what you're saying, and he'll say, I hear what you're saying, I accept what you're saying.
So it depends on the velachim
inah. Yeah.
Okay. But, couldn't it strike someone as, you know, you're saying nice things, you're always saying nice things, and then comes the rebuke, and you say, oh, he was just buttering me up, wasn't he? He was just trying to, you know, lure me into this state of mind, and then
towards
the
what
he really wanted to say.
Couldn't
this possibly backfire on you?
100%. 100%. Two things. Firstly, I didn't mean to be insincere. Quite the contrary. I meant that when we come to give rebuke, a person has to view the other person as a whole. And if we can be honest, then we will recognize that even though what's driving me crazy is that my roommate walks in at midnight, slams the door, and wakes me up, and that's what I want to talk to him about. That's exactly what I want to talk to him about, and nothing else, and I don't see anything else. So that's why before I talk to him, I'm going to stop and think. Wait a second. He brings me lunch when I'm sick in bed. He calls and checks that I'm okay when I don't show up at night. He doesn't complain even though I snore. He doesn't complain even though I don't shower every week. He's an excellent roommate. He's got a great sense of humor. He's a friend that I want to stay in touch with for life. He's a really, really great guy, and when I'm stuck in learning, he'll always help me, and he's looking out for my good. There's this one point where he drives me crazy, that he wakes me up and then I can't fall back asleep, and he ruins my next day's learning, and that I can give you a million reasons why it's critical that he stops slamming that door in the middle of the night. But let me get a whole picture. So then, if I'm sincere, and I'm not talking about working on myself, wow, let me mean it. Let me say it and mean it. No, let's think about it truthfully and then recognize it. The next step is that usually when we say something positive, we say it with half a heart. We have a very hard time giving true approbation, giving true praise, appreciation. Usually the way it works is, thank you for your help today. I appreciate that you checked up on when I'm not here. But when we want to say rebuke, oh, then we can put our heart into it. You know how you ruined my day yesterday. You know how you're slamming that door ruined my night, and then I wasn't focused on my chavrusa and I didn't follow the shir. We could really put our heart into saying something negative. But when it comes to saying something positive, we have a problem because our ego stands in our way. If I say he's good, then what am I? We have a very hard time giving appreciation, but that can be remedied. It's a matter of getting used to it. We are accustomed to hearing praise primarily as flattery, and therefore we're accustomed to giving praise primarily as flattery. I once told a friend, it's great to see you. So he said, let me be honest with you for a second. You've said that to me numerous times. Do you really mean it? So I was taken aback. I said, you think I don't mean it? He said, yeah, people don't usually say, I'm happy to see you. I'm really happy we got to learn together today. So I said, yeah, of course I really mean it. I wouldn't say it if I didn't really mean it. I say it. What? Yeah. No, but it's true. But people are so unaccustomed to it that the first thing a person thinks when you tell them something positive is, uh-oh, where is he headed? He's buttering me up, right? It's not true. We just have to get accustomed to expressing positive emotion as well. So it's a habit. I agree with you that for most people, at the onset, it's going to be tough. We're not used to it. We haven't heard it. We don't hear people saying it to us. We're not accustomed to saying it to others. But the sooner we get into the habit, the better it'll be for us and for the people around us. I don't understand why when Harus is finished learning, one never thinks he should tell the other one, thank you, I really enjoyed our learning today. Why not? They do great. Okay, I try to say it to my chavrutot because it's true. If it isn't true, I don't say it. But
you don't say, man, learning with you really sucked today.
I don't see a reason to say that.
Okay, but in the context of this, though, it definitely is buttering someone.
No, it's a true perspective.
Also, just like being able to not have tunnel vision about the issue. Not just.
And I'll tell you, part of it stems from how we really feel about our fellow man. Because if it were a person's own child, a person wouldn't have a problem doing this. Meaning when a person feels like he has to say something to his child, if he's mature enough and thought out enough, then I'll sit the kid down and I'll say, look, your classroom, I know, you wake up on time and that's great. You show up to school on time, that's excellent. You're working really hard and I'm very proud of you. You're doing great. Your English teacher says that on spelling you need to put in more work. What are we going to do about it? A person would have no problem taking the time and saying it with meaning, and if he's intelligent, he's going to do it. I said it in a way that's less meaningful than the way a parent should say it. A parent should really say it in a more meaningful way. But that's because he cares about his kid. So you can tell him the positive things. About our roommate, we care less. So it's harder to see and say the positive. But that's wrong. That's also dishonest, as we discussed in yesterday's class. That's what Lashon Hara is all about. Focusing on the negative. The negative might be true. The question is the focus. Remember, you were here yesterday, right?
Yeah. Since we're on the point of something, despite hesitation, difficulty to compliment people. Like, I see it in myself, it disturbs me, and I want to do it. And there seems to be such an unusual, like, you want to say it, you say it sometimes, but you feel to give genuine and compliment. And also, when people give you, you feel always very kind of uneasy. And you don't want to say back. Also.
Thank you. Thank you.
In any compliment.
I don't know. I can't think of every comment
okay.
Now. But
positive. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Tudaroba. Yeah, I'll tell you. I sometimes get an email that says thank you so much for the website, and I'm sitting out here in Uzbekistan, and I got no contact with any Judaism, and through your website, I'm learning Torah. So I usually send an email response that says thank you so much for giving me your positive feedback. It really involves a lot of hard work to keep the website going. And when I get emails like this, it gives me the encouragement that, that helps me keep going forward. And I tell them that I appreciate their appreciation. So I don't say the same words each time. It's not a standard form email. But that's the idea, to show appreciation for their appreciation. It's positive that people have appreciation. And very often what happens when people give appreciation in our day and age is that the reaction is, it's nothing. Or to knock them, or to knock the compliment. That's people are uncomfortable. They don't know what to say, so they say something that knocks either the compliment or the giver of the compliment, which is even worse. And they don't mean to knock either one. They're just uncomfortable and they don't know how to respond. So I think a person should train himself to respond positively. I worked on it with myself. I also I was in the same boat, and I decided I have to work on it. I think so. I think that's what the Torah wants us to do. I think that's. Also, I'll give you a simple example. Many people have a hard time telling their parents, I love you. They can tell their kids, they can tell their spouse, they can't tell their parents. So, a person should work on it. Is a person going to reach 120 years and he'll never tell his parents, I love you? Or his grandparents? I think it's pretty sad. I think it's pretty sad, but it's something defunct in our system that we have a hard time expressing emotion. I think it stems in part from the society we live in, where again, positive emotion is usually fake, and it's only viewed in the context of the opposite gender. We're not accustomed to positive emotion between this type of relationship. I think it's wrong. I think it's something. Right?
My mother is not sure.
Try writing it first.
Mama, you mentioned it's exaggerated also. Because you always have prayed and perhaps you might have exaggerated emotion. I'm coming out like, we're from Greece and we're much more, remotely expressive of emotion. And even there, like you see, I see it myself a big problem. And you want to compliment, you want to say the good word, but you don't want to go for it.
Why not? I always say better err in the direction of saying too much positive. I don't see why. No, quite the contrary. People spend their life feeling unappreciated. That's the feeling that most people have most. That's the one frustration that people have throughout their lives. The guy could be a taxi driver. And if you talk to him, he'll tell you all kinds of stories about how people just don't appreciate his work. He does his best to help them and get the best route. Whatever a person does, there's an element of feeling I should be appreciated for what I'm doing, and I'm not appreciated enough. Like Mark Twain said, when people compliment me, I'm embarrassed, and I'm embarrassed that I feel like they didn't compliment me enough. That's what he said, and I think it's a true human emotion. So I don't think a person has to worry that he'll compliment too much. On the other hand, Chazal said, a person shouldn't be a sycophant. A person isn't supposed to go overboard and say things he doesn't mean and say things that aren't true. But I think there's a lot that is true, and we're very far from it. It's one of the greatest shortcomings in marriage, and it's one of the keys that people who master it have a much more beautiful marriage. And not only that, if you want to know the difference between spouses who have the strength to invest much more on behalf of one another and those who do not, it usually lies in this point. If a husband can show appreciation to his wife, if he can really express it and she could really sense it, then she can put in much, much more strength, and she'll need much less jewelry and fur coats and vacations. Why does she need all of these? The vacation she might need because she needs to catch her breath. But all the other things very often is because he's not expressing his appreciation and his love enough. So he is trying to show it, because it's easier to show it. I could kill myself and earn a mink coat for her, but to tell her the words, that's just much harder, right? So we have to work on it, because if we could say the words, our lives are going to be different, and they'll be much happier too, for us and for them, because we both lose when we can't give appreciation. We also lose because we can't express appreciation. Think so. I think someone once said, if you look at prayer, you understand what a healthy individual is. What is prayer? You say appreciation, I recognize what you're giving me. You say thanks, and you ask for what you need. If a person knows how to do that, well, that's one of the keys to being healthy.
Sometimes it strikes me like that. You know, you never know. Maybe it's just me. I don't know.
Huh? He means the captaincy. Okay. He means to say things that you don't mean, to be insincere in one's praise.
That's not an ideal.
What?
That's not an ideal.
Right. So a person has to work on his sincerity, right?
One thing I wanted to say before is this idea of uniform, like standardized things to say, like, something I find myself having to do with all these, but eventually, not even with some like birthdays. Okay, you know, I see online a lot of people's birthdays come up, and I have to wish this person happy birthday. I just go happy birthday with an exclamation point. I'm gonna do that for like 25 people, and like it just seems like that's not, I'm not really wishing this person happy birthday. I'm just giving the standardized initiative.
Right.
And so then I try to think of like how will like wish this person happy birthday. It becomes kind of,
difficult it is, but worthwhile. I also think it is. I told the guys a few years ago that when we got married, so I left the community in the United States where I had grown up. So my parents, we had an engagement party, and then it was the farewell party really from the community. So a lot of people came, and people ordinarily bring gifts to an engagement party, and we sat down and wrote thank you letters to the people. And in the thank you letters, I basically said thank you for the last 20 years. And I wished them well. And people came one by one to the door to thank us for our thank you letters. I wrote to one like how I always enjoyed his Yom Kippur davening as the chazan, and it's one of the things I'm going to take away with me when I leave the community. His wife told my parents that he framed my letter and it's hanging in their house. People are thirsting. People are yearning for appreciation. And when you sit down and take the 2 minutes to give them that appreciation, people marvel at it. It's something that people do not give other people. And people spend their lives yearning for it. My parents told me that after I left, we had the engagement party Motzei Shabbos, and Sunday afternoon I left. So Sunday morning I sat down and just wrote till we left. My parents told me for the next 2-3 weeks, people would come to their house knocking and saying thank you for the letter. I never heard of people saying thank you for a thank you letter. But I wrote each one a paragraph saying thank you. These are people who I grew up with. And it made a difference to them. I'm telling you, people framed it. Not one. And it's not that I'm such a great writer. It's that they never got appreciation from anyone. A guy spending his life as a Baal Tefillah for the Kehillah. So people say, Yisher Koach. It was a nice davening. But who sits down and writes a letter? I wouldn't have written a letter either. But I got a gift from him and from the other guy. So I wrote a letter. In the letter, I already said thank you for that too. I'm telling you, people spend their life thirsting for this. And it's also a good key in business. When you meet with a person and you can show true admiration and appreciation for what he's done, you've already bonded with the person. And I'm not talking about zakatnice. Talking about real appreciation. I can tell you stories, but I don't think it's necessary. If you want, I'll tell you stories.
Even here in the hall, like in
enough your food or this. And since they have the feeling, I don't know, since that you are friends anyway, like they feel that you don't say thank you. And even like as manners, it's not.
Really? I don't know. Maybe I'm here for too long. I don't notice it. I don't know. I'm trying to think, but I haven't encountered it. Maybe I have. I don't know.
I'm not saying everybody, of course.
I don't know. I see. I haven't noticed it. I don't know. I don't know. Yeah.
So there's something wrong with people who come out of America and.
Trying to think, I could answer you in short, I could answer you in long. It's going to be a long answer, then it's pretty off topic of our Mishlei, so then I would wait. If I'll answer you in a nutshell, I'm not sure I'm doing it justice. So maybe we'll leave it for later tonight, we'll get back to it. Mm. I think the question deserves a longer answer.
Do you understand what I'm asking about, right?
I think I do, and I'll try to answer it. Pasuk Chaf Zayin. Hachin b'chutz melachtecha ve'atida basadelach achar uvanita beitecha. Shlomo Melech is giving us good advice here. We usually attribute it to the Rambam, but here we have a pasuk openly in Mishlei that gives us this advice. Shlomo Melech says, prepare your source of parnasa before you build your home. Rambam writes it, but here that's what Shlomo HaMelech is saying. Hachin b'chutz melachtecha. Prepare your work outside, out in the field. Ve'atida, and prepare, basadeh, in the field, lach, for yourself, so that you have what to eat. Achal, after you have a source of parnasa, you have a field. You have a field that you've been working, and you have a source to live from. Uvanita beitecha, go ahead and build your home, because otherwise you'll have a home, but you'll have no way of supporting the home. So this is good advice in life. You got to figure out how you're going to support yourself, not at the expense of learning in Machon Meir, because otherwise you'll have a life that's maybe filled with money and empty of values. But at the same time, you do have to think. Well, what am I going to do about parnasa, and figure out a game plan that works, not just theoretical. So Shlomo HaMelech is saying, prepare. People are very often thinking, let me get married, and then I'll clean floors, and you'll clean floors, and when you have three kids and you'll have to buy diapers and your expenses will go up, I'll move to Yishuv. And whose floors will you clean there? You gotta be a little bit thought out. You gotta plan a little bit how you're gonna make it work. Pasuk Chafchet. If you guys want, we have more text. You want Hebrew English? Okay. Al tehi ed chinam bere'echa vahafitita bispatecha. Shlomo HaMelech says, don't be a free witness for the faith of your friend. Your friend comes and tells you, you know, I just got to convince so-and-so that this happened. Tell them that it happened. You don't know if it happened or it didn't happen. So don't be a free witness on his behalf. You might say, well, I know he's telling the truth, so let me say that it's true what he's saying. A guy says, I got to tell my wife I'm late because of the traffic jam. Just tell her there was a traffic jam. You were stuck in traffic too. But I didn't take the same route you did. But I'm telling you there's a traffic jam there. So Shlomo HaMelech says, don't. Maybe for the sake of Shlom Bais is a different story. But in general, Shlomo HaMelech is saying, don't be a free witness. Someone's telling you, just support me in what I'm saying. You say it's true. Other people will believe both of us. And you have complete faith in him. Still says Shlomo HaMelech, don't do it. Vahafitita. Even if there was a time when you asked him to do it for you, don't you do it for him. You shouldn't be asking him for it, but even if you did ask him for him to come and say it on your behalf, don't you do it for him. Vahafitita, even if you were mifate, even if you encouraged him to help you in doing the same thing, Shlomo HaMelech says, don't get caught into the cycle. Don't say what you don't know. Now this is an important point. I once went to Makolet here in the neighborhood and I asked them, you know, in one of the buildings next to you guys, there's a money changer. Could you tell me which building it is? So they said, nope. So I said, what do you mean, nope? You're here for 20 years already. And this money changer is here. It's a private person in his own home. So they said, ask someone else, don't ask us. So I said, okay, there's an issue between you and them. I'm not getting involved. Fine, I'll ask someone else. So then the store owner felt uncomfortable. So he said, well, just go down to the third entrance there, but I didn't tell you anything. So the other guy in the store tells him, you didn't learn your lesson? You didn't learn your lesson? You're still getting involved? So they saw that I'm like caught in the middle of all this. So they told me, here's what happened. A guy once walked in here and asked us where the money changer is. We told him. He went to the money changer and said, I'm best friends with the Makolet owner. He sent me to you. So the money changer said, oh, you're friends with him? Fine. He gave them a check and they cashed the check. They gave him money. The check bounced. They came to the owner of the Makolet. They said, where's the guy who gives the check? He said, I don't know. They said, you sent him. What do you mean you don't know? We trusted him because you sent him. The Makolet owner says, I didn't send him. He asked me where you're at. I told him where you're at. So they said, well, then don't tell anyone else where we're at. We don't want, we trusted him because we thought he was your friend. Sometimes it's very tempting to just say, yeah, what he said is right. Why shouldn't I back a person? Shlomo HaMelech says, don't go into overdraft when it comes to faith. Even though he's your friend, even though you trust him, what you know you say, what you don't know don't say. Al tiyed chinam. Don't be a free witness. And the Chazal tell us similar stories about Rav Anan, that sometimes by just giving a location and people say you sent them, already it's assumed that you've given them a stamp of approval. Very often if someone asks me, they ask me for a referral, so if it's a referral for something private, like I tell the person, either I know him or I don't know him. If I know the person, I say I know him. As far as I know, he's a trustworthy guy. A guy he asked me to get tefillin for him. So I got the tefillin and I told the scribe, I said, look, I'm not telling you that you should give him the tefillin on credit. I don't know if he'll pay you. I don't know. The guy asked me for your address. I told him to go to you. But I'm not telling you that he's my best friend and you could rely on anything to give him tefillin and assume he'll come back 2 months later and pay you for the tefillin. I'm not telling you to trust him. I gave the address. A person has to be careful that he shouldn't be a free reference for people. That's also an application of this pasuk. Yeah, just today, a person asked me for a reference where he could learn Mila. So I told him where I learned Mila. And then I called the person who I learned Mila by and I said, if he calls you, you should know I met him today and he seems like a decent person. I don't know him beyond that. So if he tells you I sent him, all that means is I met him today, he heard I'm a mall, he asked me who I learned by, I sent him to you. I didn't want a situation, you know, when you learn Mila, it's a lot of money. So very often you spread it out over a year or two, that or half a year that you're making payments. I don't know if this guy's checks bounce or not. I met him today for the first time. I didn't want a situation where this guy's trusting him because he says he's my friend. I learned my lesson from that Makolet owner. So I call. Today I called. Today the guy came. I gave him the name and number, and I also called and said, I don't know. Pasuk Chavtet. Al tomar. Kasher asali. Kein eeselo. Ashiv laish. Kefa olo. Shlomo Amel says, a person shouldn't think, I'll just pay him back like he did for me. When I needed it, he bore free witness on my behalf. Why shouldn't I bear free witness on his behalf? No, says Shlomo HaMelech. He says, even though you were improper and you asked him to testify for you, tell them what I'm saying is true, and he agreed, don't repeat his mistake. Don't say, well, I'll just pay him back the way he did it for me, I'll do it for him. No. And this is a point we discussed last week or the week beforehand. I told you guys the story about was it here? About the mafia boss and the stolen motorcycle. We have here in our neighborhood a big mafioso. If you guys don't know, I hope. And I don't want to go into details. I don't know him either. He had a friend who was who lived two buildings down from him, and that guy had his motorcycle stolen one night. So this top mobster meets his friend a day or two later, and he says, I don't see your motorcycle parked in front anymore. What happened? So he tells him, I don't know, 2 nights ago I parked it here, and I got up in the morning and it was robbed. The motorcycle was gone, the chain snapped, and the motorcycle's gone. He says, really? Give me the details of your motorcycle. So he says, no, it's stolen, it's gone. He says, I know, give me the details. He says, okay. He gives him the details of the motorcycle. 2 days later, the motorcycle's standing in front of his house. It seems like everyone's connected. You just got to have the right connections. So the guy didn't know what to do. On the one hand, he's happy he got his motorcycle back. But on the other hand, he never knew, he was always wary that this guy shouldn't say, well, I did you a favor, you owe me one. Now just take this package or just do me this favor or something else.
Who knows what was done to procure this motorcycle?
I don't know. I don't know what happened behind the scenes. I can only tell you that the guy was concerned. He tried to figure out, how does he get out of this debt? Because he wasn't about to do something illegal to repay the debt. I really don't know. So Shlomo HaMelech says, I don't say, well, if he did it for me, I'll do it for him. That's a wrong calculation. He did something wrong on your behalf. You don't owe him one on that. You'll pay him back a different way. Al sedei ish atzel avarti v'al kerim adam chasar lev. Shlomo HaMelech says, he's giving us an allegory now, he's giving us a beautiful mashal, and he's trying to point out what the product of laziness is, as we will see in a second. He says, I walked by a vineyard of someone who's lazy. Now you guys know vineyards, you've seen them around Israel. The way of a grapevine grows is that it needs something to grow on. So you build you build a little L shape, a little T shape, and then the vine grows along the T. So this guy, he had a field, the vineyard of a person who lacked a heart. And what I saw in this field, in this vineyard, v'hine alachulo kimeshonim kasufanav harulim v'gederavanav. And behold, this whole field was covered with thorns. The guy was lazy, so he never took the time to plow the field. He never took the time to uproot the thorn bushes so they don't grow. So instead, the field got covered with thorns. Kotzim and kimshonim and charolim are two types of thorns. V'geder avanav, and the wool, the stone wall that surrounded the field, neherasa, because the lazy person doesn't bother taking care of it. Va'echeze anochi ashit libihi ra'iti lakachti musar. And when I saw this, I took heart. I said, let's see what is the product of laziness. I have to learn from this. And the lesson from all this is me'at sheinot, me'at tenunot, me'at chibuk yadayim lishkav. A person has to lessen the time that he sleeps. A person has to lessen the time that he naps. A person has to lessen the time that he stands with his hands put together. Uva mitalech reishecha. And if you're productive, a person spends less time sleeping and napping. So then, even if a person finds himself impoverished, he starts off at the bottom of the ladder, he will find himself going up the ladder, he will quickly find himself producing and finding himself out of poverty. Umachsorecha ki'ish magin. And even if a person is in a state that he's lacking, he is not yet wealthy, he'll be like the person who carries the shield up front to the war, that he's always advancing in front of the warriors, and so too he will be able to consistently advance in life. So Shlomo Amel says, laziness is one of those things where it's short-term gain and long-term loss. A person's lying in bed and he's cold. He could get up and get a blanket, or he could lie there and say, I'm tired. So he's going to lie there and freeze all night long and wake up with a cold and have a horrible day the next day saying, oh, what a horrible night I had. I never took into account that it was so cold. I got the same thing now. A guy could be lying in bed and it's hot and he's not going to go and open the window. And all night long he's going to be going crazy from the heat. Laziness is short-term gain. Right now I'm not getting up and dealing with the problem, but it's long-term loss. People know they have to deal with Aliyah, they know they have to deal with their visa, they know they have to deal with certain things, and they just push it off. Well, you know what, when you push it off, you'll have much more things to fix. That's the story of the field. The guy kept saying, I don't want to plow the field today, I don't want to get up early and pull the weeds, I don't want to deal with it now. Well, you know what, over time, it catches up with the person. And then, to rectify the problem takes much, much, much more work. Laziness is not about not doing work. Laziness is about letting things deteriorate, and then there's much more work to fix them. A guy has a cavity, doesn't deal with it. I don't have time to go to the dentist. I'm learning, right? We always have that reason. I'm busy learning. Well, at the end, it becomes a root canal and a crown, and it's much more work and much more money, and that's life. So Shlomo Amel says, I saw the field, I saw it, and I learned my lesson. And this brings us to what's called the 25th chapter, which is a new beginning. This is where we'll pick up next time, Bezrat Hashem, that these two are Shlomo's Mishalim. Here, the book seems to break. Meaning, it seems to be like two different types of Mishalim. There's Mishlei Til here, and from here onward, there's an introduction. These two are going to be Shlomo's Mishalim, and we'll pick up here, Bezrat Hashem, next time.